The second case for oral argument this morning is the State of South Dakota versus Joseph A. Lafferty. For the appellant, State of South Dakota, is Jennifer Utter, Deputy State's Attorney from Pennington County in Rapid City. For the appellee is Ms. Paula Camp from the Pennington County Public Defender's Office, also in Rapid City. Ms. Utter, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
Chief Justice, may it please the court and counsel. Good morning. In March of 2004, a victim in Rapid City reported that the defendant, Joseph Lafferty, had sex with her at the Tradewinds Motel in Rapid City when she was drunk. As a result, the defendant was charged with the crime of second-degree rape, victim intoxication. 1 week, the defendant was tried and acquitted of second-degree rape charges. The issues in that trial were whether or not there had been sexual penetration and whether or not this victim was too intoxicated to consent. He was acquitted. 1 week later, an indictment was brought, same victim, same 15-year-old girl, against the 27-year-old defendant, Joseph Lafferty, on charges of third-degree rape. The elements of that crime are that there was an act of sexual penetration, that the victim was under 16 years old, and that the defendant was more than 3 years older than the victim. The trial court dismissed that indictment for third-degree statutory rape on the grounds that jeopardy had somehow attached to this new crime during the course of the previous trial. It's the state's position that that trial court decision is in error, and we are urging this court to overrule that decision and reinstate the proceedings below.
Do you concede that if double jeopardy applies, that it was appropriate for the trial court to dismiss the indictment? Because I know there's pretty limited grounds under where a trial court can dismiss an indictment.
That's correct, and I would agree with that.
All right. Thank you.
When this court is considering de novo the question of whether or not this court will apply its own law with regards to new charge double jeopardy and the elements analysis, this court must first look at the plain words of the statute. And the plain meaning of those words are very simply separate and distinct from the words in the second-degree statutory rape language. As previously indicated, one issue is victim intoxication. The other issue is the age of the parties involved. And age was not presented. It was not a factor in the first trial, and jeopardy did not attach on the plain meaning of the words of the statute.
So you think if you have any one distinguishing feature, then you could just continually keep trying cases despite jeopardy concerns?
I think there are some practical limitations to that. Certainly the facts must fit. I mean, the facts for
I mean, if you
session.
Failed on, if you failed here on, why couldn't you bring a child abuse, charge, or I'm sure there's two or three other charges that could probably be brought or distinguished in some way for one incident, right?
That's correct. And this court has held that that is permitted under South Dakota law. In State versus Flitty, there was an extensive discussion about new charge double jeopardy and whether or not something just such as you mentioned could occur. And in that case, and in subsequent cases that have adopted and followed that same reasoning, this court has never required that all possible permutations of a crime be presented in one proceeding. While acknowledging a defendant might sure like that to happen, and it would certainly be a better use of government resources, that the considerations and whether or not all the charges are lumped together and brought at the same time has not been the law in South Dakota. And when you had mentioned, and I was trying to recall the you had mentioned the child abuse cases, and there are several cases in South Dakota that talk about whether child abuse and assault can be considered all at the same time or at separate times. And it's the state's position that if the elements are different, despite one event happening, if the elements are different, then it's a separate crime, and jeopardy does not attach to that.
Are the elements really that different? One of them is the victim is incapable, and the other one is the victim is 10 years of age. Isn't really that the same? In both cases, they're incapable. Isn't that of consenting?
Respectfully, I disagree. Because in subsection 4, because a victim might be incapable of consenting, there are several reasons that are listed there. They're too drunk. They're on drugs. Maybe it's some kind of anesthetic agent, for instance, at a hospital. Maybe it is some kind of hypnosis. Agreed. All of those different types of impairment that are listed in that subsection, jeopardy attached to all of them. No question, the state could not proceed in a second proceeding and say, oh, well, we have discovered new evidence that somehow she was under hypnosis at the time. No, jeopardy has attached. And in terms of the levels of impairment, that goes to their consciousness, and it's not limited by age. Certainly, it is a very sad fact that it is possible that a 15-year-old or even a 10-year-old could be drunk or could be drugged. And those are difficult facts to deal with on a hypothetical basis.
So you're saying all the subsections of the rape statute are individual crimes. So you could start with number one, and if you if he was not convicted of number one, then you could charge him again under number two and go down all the way through number seven, and he could be tried seven times for the same action.
Hypothetically, if the elements are determined to be different.
Well, under your argument, they would all be different.
Yes. When this court is looking at whether or not to just take the words of the statute and look at the plain meaning of those words, look at Blackburger. And look at Blackburger when it says it's not an events test, it's not a transaction test, it's an elements test. And there are practical limitations, there are factual limitations. Certainly under Justice Meyer Henry's hypothetical, if the facts don't fit, if the victim is 15 and not under age 10, then it's not going to happen that way. So there are just factual considerations just to even bring those charges and survive a directed verdict at the time of trial, if you make it that far and if you make it to trial. If, however, those matters are not addressed in the age was never addressed in this underlying matter, jeopardy never attached. And on that basis, under the plain meaning of the statute, the words of the statute, then jeopardy did not attach, and the state is appropriately bringing these charges.
We have also said, however, we look to the intent of the legislature. Can you address that? Do you believe that, what is your argument that the legislature intended the result that you're seeking here?
The words of the statute.
Okay, and each one is or. They're disjunctive.
Yes.
But they all define rape.
Yes.
Okay, so explain to me why you think the legislature meant them each to be a separate crime.
The words are different. The elements of the crimes are different. It's the same event. I in no way avoid the idea that this is the same event. This is a legal argument, and the state is asking this court to apply its law as it has developed the elements test to the elements of this crime. The law as it has developed, not requiring the prosecution to bring all possible charges initially, and Once again, there are factual considerations and there are practical considerations that are going to occur at the trial court level, but really this issue is squarely before the court on a legal basis, not on a factual basis. And really, what the defendant is inviting you to do is to make a subsection exception to other areas of South Dakota law.
We've already done that on aggravated assault.
The aggravated assault cases, not in the context of new charge double jeopardy. In the context of sentencing double jeopardy, you have.
But it's the same thing. It's an elements analysis.
I disagree. For new charge double jeopardy, it is an elements analysis. For sentencing double jeopardy, you are looking at a trial court that is attempting, there are different statutory obligations and duties of a prosecutor bringing those charging decisions, of the trial court fashioning a sentence that balances the interests of society with rehabilitation and with punishment for a defendant, and all that entire line of cases that talks about aggravated assault is in the context of sentencing double jeopardy. Those cases, if you look at the defendant's brief, Baker, Morado, Chavez, those cases, they were all, the state was permitted to charge them. That wasn't even a part of the court's critique during those cases. At the time of sentencing double jeopardy, then the trial court is fashioning that rehabilitation and balancing sentence. At the time of new charge double jeopardy, the prosecutor is presenting information to either a body of such a grand jury or a magistrate judge for purposes of presenting the facts and the case to the jury and holding a defendant accountable. So, yes, there is that analysis that's done in the context of sentencing double jeopardy, but that is a separate and distinct issue. And it's especially in, and I read again, State versus Jensen. Justice Center was the trial court judge at the time, and many of the members of this bench were present in the Supreme Court when that case was heard. And there was a specific issue as to whether or not the prosecutor could bring these charges, whether they had to charge in the alternative. And at that time, the Supreme Court affirmed the trial court's determination that the prosecutor is not required because you don't know what facts are going to come up during the course of the trial. And so the prosecutor was not required to elect at that time. And that applies here as well. And it took into account the sentencing double jeopardy issue at the time of sentencing. He was charged with 3 counts of murder. He was sentenced on 1 count of murder. And that distinction is very important to consider a new charge double jeopardy and the sentencing double jeopardy. And when you're considering the new charge double jeopardy, you look at the plain meaning, and you look at the words, and you look at this court's decisions discussing the elements test and how certain and predictable that is for both parties. The trial court. For this court, when you're doing a review and reviewing how those laws are applied and interpreted, it is a certain, it is a predictable test, and it is fair to both parties. When you're considering those new charge double jeopardy questions, you look at the line of cases that it doesn't necessarily end with Jensen, but it certainly begins with Flitty and continues on throughout South Dakota law, that a prosecutor is not required to bring all potential charges at the same time. Practically, in effect, there is some public interest and judicial economy reasons for attempting to do that as best as we possibly can with the time and resources that we have. If this court says, well, except for subsections now, we're still going to uphold that line of law. Prosecutor doesn't have to bring it, but you have to bring all subsections. Now there's a subsection exception to that line of cases in South Dakota. If there is now a subsection exception to the idea that alternative charges, previously alternative charges have not been required, but if there's a subsection exception to that line of cases in South Dakota, then frankly, prosecutors and trial courts will adapt accordingly, just as we have adapted accordingly to this court's decisions, for instance, that have to do with rape and criminal pedophilia. It's something that is workable, and definitely we work within that. We do rely on the South Dakota Supreme Court's decisions in doing our jobs. And the thing about the elements test is that it continues to uphold all of those case, all of that line of cases, and provides a certain and predictable result. If, and really, that's the question before this court. Are these other line of cases, the elements test, alternative charging, bringing all charges at the same time, are we going to make an exception for a subsection of a statute? Is this court going to rely not upon the words, but upon its placement on the page? And if that's the case, then prosecutors and trial court judges will adapt to that. Unfortunately, if the legislature sees fit to take these statutes in questions and split them up and put them in a different part, different page in the Red Book, then if this court's decision would be any different, it's no longer certain and predictable. You've created a subsection test. And maybe the subsection test, as just a matter of policy, would be considered to be certain and predictable. But what then happens is that on an individual basis, as a matter of course, what if the legislature says, okay, we're just going to make them all, we're going to give them all different numbers. Now they're all different numbers, and if this court's analysis would be any different, well, then we go back to the elements test and the other line of cases that this court has already determined.
But our line of cases, my understanding, and you read the language, what we're trying to do is determine what the legislative intent is. And if it is clear by what they pass that they meant two different punishments and that these would be two different crimes, we abide by that. We don't establish, we don't set forth the law. The legislature writes it, and we attempt to, I mean, we're bound by what the words that they use as well and how they've put it together and defined it. And they've defined rape in all of these subsections. And I guess the question is, in your argument, I don't think that the decision here would, I mean, those are alternatives that the legislature has the authority to do, but we don't have the authority to do. We have to look at what they've written here, and I guess that's what we have to look at.
And the state is requesting you look at the words. And if the words are different, then it's a different crime.
Even if they're subsections.
Yes. It is the state's position that jeopardy did not attach on this new charge of third-degree rape at these prior proceedings, based upon the certain and predictable elements analysis, the words themselves of the statute, as well as the cases in South Dakota that support such an interpretation. Public policy does favor a certain and predictable result. It doesn't favor a subsection test. We urge this court to overturn the lower court and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Utter. Okay. Ms. Camp, you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. The state contends that double jeopardy can be split into hairs, new double jeopardy, new charge double jeopardy, sentencing double jeopardy, things of that nature. The reality is that double jeopardy is a complex and confusing area of the law. However, it's very simple. The Fifth Amendment of the United States says that no person shall be subject to the same offense to be put twice in jeopardy of life and limb. And that is echoed by the South Dakota State Constitution, Article 9, Section 6. Excuse me, Article 6, Section 9. Essentially, what this case is about is that an individual was charged for rape, one act of rape that occurred on March 15th. He was tried and he was acquitted. The state indicated to you that on that date he was charged with second-degree rape. Well, there's a fact that was left out. He was charged with second-degree rape in the alternative third-degree rape. And within the degrees of consanguinity by which marriages are void. He was charged with second degree in the alternative third degree by indictment by a grand jury. And that case took several months from essentially from March all the way until December when that case was tried. 3 days prior to the trial, the second count, the alternative count of third degree rape was dismissed. And trial proceeded on the second degree rape charge, and Mr. Lafferty was acquitted.
So that was Section 6?
Yeah. Section 6. Why Section 6? That is a mystery to us. The evidence presented at the grand jury, a question was asked by the presiding prosecutor at the grand jury, how old are you? The statement was given, I'm 15. Do you know how old Mr. Lafferty was? I don't know, in his 20s or something. But he's older than 3 years older than you? Yes. That evidence was presented to the grand jury, and the grand jury found evidence of consanguinity. No evidence was ever presented of consanguinity to the grand jury.
But that's a red herring. I mean,
yes, it is.
Consanguinity is another element, and
exactly,
it doesn't have anything
to do with
this.
The point of the issue is that we proceeded to trial on account of rape, and these were in the alternative. Had it been the proper statutory rape under the proper subsection, the state could not have secured two convictions. It would have been in the alternative. And maybe at that time, the jury would have acquitted under the second degree and found him guilty under count two of the statutory rape. The point is, Justice Meyer-Henry, you pointed it out absolutely perfectly. When does it end? The state, under the state's theory, these are seven rapes. They are not seven rapes. The legislature intent is clear, clear, clear. Rape is an act of sexual penetration with any person that occurs under any of the following circumstances. Mr. Lafferty was tried for rape. Rape was the crime. Rape was which he was tried. There are seven different ways to accomplish the act of rape, but it's still one offense. The Blockberger test that the state wishes you to rely on clearly states, when comparing two distinct statutory provisions, when you're comparing two different statutory provisions, then you can look at the elements, and if one is not present in the other, it's permissible to charge both. For example, a person is driving down the street having had too much to drink. That person doesn't have a license, doesn't have insurance, and is weaving. Upon charging, it's perfectly permissible, and that person can be charged with DUI and reckless driving and no insurance and no driver's license because the elements are all different for one act of driving down the street because those are different statutes, different offenses. It's not a subsection test. It's an offense test. What is the offense here? The offense is rape. The offense is aggravated assault. If you have a 27-year-old man who has a 9-year-old victim that he ties up, who happens to be the daughter of his wife, whom he provided with alcohol prior to the incident, and perhaps that person is in a wheelchair, then exactly as Justice Meyer-Henry pointed out, we start with first-degree rape. Didn't get it. Okay. So now we're going to go to the next section. We're going to go with force and coercion, rape by force. We didn't get that. He was acquitted. Okay, so we'll go to the next one. Incapable of consent due to being a physical incapacity for the wheelchair. Oh, he's acquitted of that one. We'll go on to the next one. Intoxication because he gave some alcohol. So we'll move on to the next one. When does it end? The fact is there was one act of rape committed, and that's what happened here. And I think that
under your example, the state could legitimately charge in the alternative all those counts.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And all they could be all alternative, and then the jury would have the election. What was the evidence? Which one was proved? Which one do we feel the evidence? And they do it all the time. And I think what's important is legislative intent, as Justice Myra Henry pointed out. The legislature, the plain, ordinary meaning of the language is very clear. It's one act of rape. And I think this court has already done this, has already looked at this issue in State v. Chernotek. You've already looked at this issue and said rape is one act that can be accomplished seven different ways. Now, granted, you were looking at it for a different reason. The question was for relation back jurisprudence. But in order to determine whether or not the state could file those amended charges, you had to decide whether or not it was broadened or substantially increased the situation. So you looked at it and determined that rape was a singular act. It doesn't change for double jeopardy purposes. If rape is a singular act for relation back purposes, it can't suddenly become multiple crimes for the purpose of double jeopardy. That doesn't make any sense. Talk about an unworkable situation. It's very clear. The legislature in this case, there are 33 crimes within Title 22 alone that have multiple subsections. The crime is rape. That can be accomplished seven different ways. Aggravated assault can be accomplished seven different ways. Disorderly conduct can be accomplished four different ways. You've also looked at, even when you look at the Blockberger case, and you look at the elements test and whether or not, that is not the sole measure of double jeopardy law. And it's a finer line than just to look at the elements. And again, you're talking about two different statutes. But even when you have two different statutes, where the elements might be slightly different, this court has already held that that is not a significant enough difference to create the legislator's intent to create two separate crimes, and that's the Perovich and Dillon line of cases. In those cases, clearly, if you take the state's chart and you plug in the elements, clearly first-degree rape and criminal pedophilia contain different elements. And if you look at them just on the face of the elements, then under the state's theory, that should be permissible. The Perovich and Dillon cases are wrongly decided exclusively. They want to parcel it and tell you it's sentencing, but it isn't sentencing. This court reversed convictions. In the aggravated assault cases that you pointed out, Justice Sinders, they didn't just say the sentencing. They completely said the convictions are overruled. The convictions are reversed. And so reality is that you've got one offense. And if you look at the Perovich and Dillon cases, again, you have cases in where the elements are different, and yet this court held that they are not so different as to show us that the legislator intended to create a separate crime. And I think that's important because criminal pedophilia is a distinct statute enacted at a different time. And the legislature, as Justice Myra Henry pointed out, certainly has the authority to tell us what to do. There are statutes within the code that specifically allow for multiple punishment. If you look at the receiving and possession of stolen motor vehicle statute, that statute clearly states nothing in this provision will prohibit a different prosecution under another subsection. For example, grand theft. It's perfectly permissible to charge grand theft and possession of a stolen motor vehicle because the legislature said it was. And so in that context, you have clear legislative intent telling you what to do and what not to do. And I think there's also a mention in the state's brief about a transaction test, and I think I've mentioned this. It's not a transaction test or a subsection test. It's merely an offense test. The Fifth Amendment states that we shouldn't be committed or should be subject to the same offense. The person on the street says, you can't try the guy twice for the same crime. What was the crime here? The crime was rape. And he was tried for rape. He was acquitted for rape. You can't try him for rape again.
Do you agree, though, that inability to consent and statutory rape, those two have elements that are different in each?
Certainly. All the elements are different within each of the seven subsections. Certainly, if you lie subsection 1, subsection 2, subsection 3, 4, 5, they're different. But so is DUI. So is the aggravated assault. They all have the common. If you look at the DUI statutes and the rape statute, the first element is common, driving or physical control of a vehicle, an act of sexual penetration. The remaining elements, the second or third element, might be different. Unable to consent due to intoxication, and Justice Meyer Henry, I would agree with you that it is an element of consent. In subsection 4, we're saying that it's unable due to intoxication, and under statutory rape, we're basically she's unable to consent because by law we've decreed at this age you are unable to consent. So it is sort of an inability to consent, but it's by statutory. But those are different elements. Certainly, the state has to prove that the person couldn't consent due to intoxication here.
Well, if they're mutually exclusive elements, how do you get around Blockberger?
Again, Blockberger controls two different statutes, two distinct statutory provisions. And I think you get around it by saying rape is one statute. It's one statute. And the Blockberger test, on the face of it, it may appear that it fits. And it does. But recall that Blockberger, the actual case at issue in Blockberger, is dealing with two different statutes. And the individual's one act violated two statutes. My driving under the influence example. My act of driving down the street having had too much to drink violates the DUI statute. It also violates the no driver's license statute. It also violates the no insurance if I don't have insurance or reckless driving statute. All of those are permissible because they're different offenses. Rape is one offense. The elements of how you commit rape may be different, but it's still one offense of rape. And this case said so in Chernotic. In Chernotic, first it started out as a forcible rape and then became a statutory rape. And this court said there was only one incident of rape ever at issue. It's seven different ways to prove it. And if you take the state's argument to the logical extreme and you just look at elements, then you've got a huge unworkable situation. You've got seven offenses of rape. You've got seven aggravated assaults. You've got four DUIs because the elements are different. So again, we try them first under the influence. We don't get it, so we move on to .08. We don't get it. We now try with the marijuana and combined alcohol. We don't get that. We try for the under the controlled substance. We don't get that. Well, I guess we don't get any DUI because we don't have any more subsections. The offense is DUI. How you commit DUI, you can commit DUI different ways. The offense is rape. How you commit rape can happen in different ways. And Blockberger would apply in the example that Justice Sabers pointed out, in a different offense. There would be child abuse or some other different kind of prosecution that might work that is not a rape charge. But you can't retry someone for rape who's already been acquitted of rape. Double jeopardy, if you will, is like a three-legged stool. One leg is subsequent prosecution after acquittal. The second leg is subsequent prosecution after conviction, and the third leg is multiple punishments. But it's all the same stool. You can't take one out and say, well, it's only applicable over here or it's only applicable over there. It's all one giant area of the law, double jeopardy. And it applies to prosecution after acquittal. Under the state's theory, it seems to me that it would never apply. If he's acquitted of this, we can try him for that. If he's acquitted of that, we can try him for that. If he's acquitted of that, we can try him of that. We can keep trying him over and over and over. Because prosecution, the only thing we couldn't try is we couldn't retry him for the exact same, offense or the same subsection. You know, we couldn't try him again for the under the incapable of consent due to intoxication. But other than that, anything in the code book is open book. And the state talks about Flitty. There are five manslaughter subsections. So we could try someone for manslaughter five different times. Well, Flitty said, Jensen. Jensen said, whatever error existed, we find harmless. So the court didn't necessarily address whether or not the state erred in bringing three non-alternative charges. But the reality of the situation is that alternative charging exists for a reason. And that is, and they do it routinely in prosecutors' offices across the country. And we do it, the person is driving under the influence, or in the alternative, they were driving while having 0.08% or more of alcohol in their blood. In this case originally started out second-degree rape, in the alternative, third-degree rape. The state has to concede they couldn't get two convictions. If these are multiple subsections and they're different crimes, then they can get multiple convictions. Then they can convict him. Maybe they don't have to sentence him twice if you want to take out the double jeopardy for sentencing purposes. They could still convict him for it. They should be able to convict him seven times if they're different crimes. You can convict him of one and the second one and the third one. Under the state's theory, you could convict the multiple times because they're different crimes. But that's not what it is. And the legislature is very clear. Rape is an act of sexual penetration under the following circumstances. And I guess it's I'm at a loss to find, if double jeopardy doesn't apply in this situation, I am at a loss to think of when it would apply for a subsequent prosecution. After an acquittal, we could just keep trying him over and over and over and over again. And there are, as I pointed out, 33 crimes in our title code today. And so, Your Honors, I think it's very clear that the ultimate outcome of this, the state's argument here, is that there'd be no end. And I think it's very clear. Blockburger is a test, and it is a good test, but it's also not it is an offense test. And the bottom line, and it's very simple for this court to decide, is rape one offense, or is it seven? If it's one offense, Mr. Lafferty has been tried and acquitted of rape, and he cannot be tried for rape again. If it is not an offense, if it's not a singular offense, then this court, I believe, needs to overrule the Perovich and Dillon cases as well as its own holding in Chernotic, because I believe this court has already found, not to mention all of the aggravated assault cases, but this court has already found that rape is a singular act. It's one offense that can be committed seven different ways. DUI is one offense that can be committed four different ways. Aggravated assault, again, seven different ways. I think that I can't conceive, as I said, of a situation in which, other than retrying him for the incapable of consent, I can't conceive of a situation in where, if double jeopardy does not apply to this case, then it would ever apply to multiple prosecutions for the same offense. And in this case, it's very clear, rape is one offense. He was tried and acquitted, and he cannot be tried again. And I thank Your Honors for your patience.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Camp. Okay, Ms. Utter, you have 10 minutes.
The state's position does not require this court to overrule Chernotic or Dillon or Perovich. First, Chernotic. This court said, for the limited purposes of relation back, this is a Sixth Amendment issue, is whether or not a defendant has notice of the nature and cause of the action against him. This court in Chernotic found that it did. It's a distinct analysis and a separate legal issue that the court was considering. The court wasn't considering new charge, double jeopardy, at that time. With regard to Dillon and Perovich, This court would not be overruling anything that came out of either of those cases because, especially in Dillon, and in looking as well at, more specifically in Dillon, this court looked at the elements and said, hey, the elements of criminal pedophilia and this rape charge where the victim is under 10 years, they're not so different. And the court looked at the elements, and the court can do that same elements analysis, for instance, with the DUI. Those are all methods of determining impairment. Certainly, as a trial-level prosecutor, I question whether there is ever the need for alternative charging in the future. Why do it? If there's going to be some kind of question that, well, Jeopardy has attached when there's an alternative charge, the answer is, as a prosecutor, as a trial-level prosecutor making that initial decision, just don't do it. But I don't think this court has to cause affect its previous decisions in that in any way. You're not going to be overruling Chernotic. That was for a different purpose and a different issue. You're not going to be overruling Dillon and Perovich because you're looking at elements and you're saying, hey, they have to be distinct elements. There's no question that the age elements and the intoxication elements are separate and distinct. They are distinguishable from each other, and they are It could have been that the state could have listed all seven of those subsections if the facts applied, if they were bound over and made it through all those checks and balances that our system of criminal justice has.
And if you did that, you could have gotten how many convictions?
It's up to the jury. If they determine the facts, in looking at the facts, and I see a drunk little girl that says I wake up to somebody having sex with me, I think she's intoxicated. She's passed out. It's up to the jury at that point
and
the facts
be,
that come
And the
forward.
Court wouldn't be required to vacate one or two or three of them or seven of them under your theory?
For instance, if they're not charged in the alternative and they are convicted, and for purposes of new charge double jeopardy, I submit and I disagree with the defendant's statement that we couldn't have secured two convictions. It's possible under the facts that we could have. But at the time of sentencing, then, if the elements are the same, for instance, in Dillon, those convictions were actually vacated. And the court stated, hey, these elements are not different enough. And so not only was it remanded for a resentencing, it was remanded and convictions were vacated for the crimes where the elements were so similar. But that didn't have anything to do with whether or not those charges were presented to a jury. And that's the state's position on it. With regard to...
So let me ask you this then. Let's say you got a conviction and... continue and then brought this second charge, then what would be the result? Under your theory then, what's the sentencing court allowed to do?
I think under the sentencing double jeopardy analysis that this court has done, that whole line of aggravated assault cases, that there is one sentence, that one sentence is fashioned. But that's the state's position, a separate analysis, and that's at the time of sentencing when a defendant has been held accountable for his actions.
I'm having a hard time understanding the difference. You want to go explain that to me a little bit more?
Why it's
different for sentencing as opposed to charging?
The several areas that the Supreme Court has said it applies to new charges after acquittal, new charges after conviction, and sentencing. And I think that those are each distinct times in our process of criminal justice where authority, statutory authority, and discretion is exercised. And it's a separate time in the process of a criminal defendant. When that initial report comes and the prosecutor is making that initial decision, then they're exercising statutory authority just to even present the case. Then it goes to another body, the checks and balances. whether it's a grand jury.
So,
but then,
so what you're saying, the double jeopardy, if I'm following you, the double jeopardy prevents the court from sentencing twice on these two crimes, but it doesn't prevent the prosecutor from prosecuting two different charges. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Well, in that regard, that was the basis for Grady versus Corbin, and that case was overruled by Dixon. I mean, that was the reason that they came to the result they did in Grady. But Dixon overruled Grady. Grady said there's different purposes, convictions, subsequent prosecutions, and sentencing. And didn't Dixon overrule that?
When, I'm not sure I'm following your analysis there, only because when I look at the duties at the beginning and at the outset, and then the sentencing court's duties in balancing the factors that the sentencing court balances, then I think that they are, it is distinct. And I think what Dixon said is, this is too confusing at the stage of the charging purposes. And Dixon was, because it was one of those opinions where more than one case was combined together, there was also there were two cases that came up at the same time that are included in Dixon. And that was the issue, was that charging decision with regards to contempt of court and these new charges, such as the protection order case or threatening to kill the wife. And that was the one that was specifically, I believe, in Dixon. But what that Dixon did leave was the collateral estoppel argument. And that's what I would like to conclude with. Because it still affects the elements test. But what Dixon allowed was it's still an opportunity for an elements analysis by the court, still an opportunity for the application of collateral estoppel and the idea that, hey, if all of those elements of a crime have been decided in a defendant's favor at the previous trial, then you don't get another shot. And that was also Justice Meyer Henry's comment, you know, where does it end? Well, where it ends is it ends with the facts. It ends with the elements that apply to those facts. It goes no farther than collateral estoppel. It begins with the prosecutor's determination. A sentencing judge exercises that discretion. And now we are, as on behalf of the state, urging this court to overrule the trial court's determination that double jeopardy applied, as it's not supported in the law. Thank you.
One question.
Yes, sir.
On appeal, we usually don't get the benefit of hearing from the Pennington County State's Attorney's Office. Usually we hear from the Attorney General's Office. What brought that about here?
That was just a decision between the Attorney General's office and the state's attorney's office.
And I don't get the answer then?
That is your answer.
It could be time. I don't know that I know the answer to that question.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.